The man, the myth, the legend, Dr. E. Michael Jones is back on the David L. Gray Show. You guys remember him from last time? We had a fascinating conversation about art, some of the books that he had published. We also there's a segment I cut out concerning rap music that turned out to be one of your favorites. So he's back on the show. We thank him on. Dr. E. Michael Jones, he was on a tenure track to become a tenured professor until the liberals found out that he is unapologetically pro-life. From there, he went on to found Culture Wars, his platform, which he publishes many books, essays. That's culturewars.com. Find out more about him and his work there, but no need introduction. I know all you guys know him. But Dr. E. Michael Jones, welcome back onto the show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Excellent. Hey, I want to get your your thoughts on what happened with the fallout at the Daily Wire between Candace Owens and Ben Shapiro. But I want to play just a couple clips related to that.
Publisher that you guys are, can you at least talk to just sort of where it's at now? She's not with you. She's free.
She's free to do whatever she wants to do, to be wherever she wants to be. And the difference between a publisher like the Daily Wire and a platform like Locals is obviously that a platform should have a very broad range of speech that it allows, including speech that maybe even the creators don't believe is inside what they would consider to be the Overton window. That's a very different thing than direct subsidization of particular opinions. So the Daily Wire would not have a host, would not pay a host who was staunchly pro-abortion. Mm-hmm. They'd have no obligation to pay a host who is staunchly pro-abortion. And so when it comes to the hosts on the Daily Wire, obviously everyone is able to say what they want. Nobody ever comes to me and says, you can't say X. Nobody ever says that to Walsh. And no one ever said that to Candace. But the reality is that there is an Overton window at the Daily Wire. Obviously, there was a non-meeting of the minds. That's pretty much all I can say on this. And, you know, a lot of this has happened publicly. To the extent that the Daily Wire is in fact not a publisher, it is a publisher, that means that there is no moral obligation for the Daily, and there's no free speech problem with the Daily Wire saying we don't wish to pay a particular host, or that host saying I don't wish to work here anymore, because again, there's a parting of the ways that is not really open for discussion at this point. That, you know, there are a lot of people who are suggesting this is about disagreements over Israel. I mean, I can safely say it is not about disagreements over Israel, to the extent that, without reference to Candace at all here, Matt Walsh has taken the position that America ought not be involved in the Middle East at all. Matt Walsh's position, so far as I understand it, and I've talked to him about it, is that Israel, in a conflict between Israel and Hamas, Israel is obviously a more moral party than the genocidal terrorist group Hamas, but also it's very far away, he doesn't care, and it doesn't involve America. That's just a pure isolationist position. I disagree with it. I think it's wrong. I think that it's short-sighted. But again, he's on our platform, that is well within the range of acceptable discourse at the Daily Wire. So,
I don't know, Dr. E. Michael Jones. It rubbed me like the Daily Wire were trying to say, okay, we're Zionist, right? And so there's a limit to how much anti-Zionism you can express on a network. When he was talking about, Matt Walsh, you know, it sounded like the token friend. You know, some people say, I'm not a racist. You know, my best friend is Korean, right? I don't hate Koreans. My best friend is a Korean, right? I work with Koreans at work. So Matt Walsh, he's the token, anti-Zionism or anti-Semitic, being anti-Semitic, you know, he can say some things, but he doesn't go too far. Well, what were your thoughts? Was it, What are we talking about here?
You're talking about something called conservatism. That's the brand. That's the thing that he tried to create there at the Daily Wire. And then once you establish that, that's a fiction. That's a kind of parameter. You have to define the limits of the parameter. Well, there's only one definition of conservatism. Okay, let's just forget all of this stuff about platforms and publishers and all this other stuff. There's one definition. It's the same definition as an American. It's called Judeo-Christian morality. Okay, so there is a broad, there's supposed to be a spectrum here. The whole term Judeo-Christian came into being around after World War II, at a time when Jews simply did not have the clout that they have now. It was a way of getting in on the part of the story, part of what's going on. Let's say somebody like Will Herberg, a book he wrote called Protestant Catholic Jew, which I think is a good idea. I talk about this all the time as basically the triple melting pot, as the real grammar of ethnicity in America. But there's a deeper fiction. That's not a fiction. That's a reality. Okay. There are three religions. Okay. They're realities. But when you get to Judeo-Christian morality, you're dealing with the realm of fiction. And we're supposed to believe that there is some type of common shared morality that they have. Well, that doesn't exist anymore. And it was the Jews blew it up. Okay. Now, the first thing that happened here is that Roe versus Wade got overturned. I think it's about maybe two years ago. As soon as that happened, it started out to be 130 Jewish organizations, ended up 400 Jewish organizations announced that abortion is a fundamental Jewish value. No one had ever said this before. Beginning with Roe versus Wade, it was always like scientists like Bernard Nathanson versus bigots like the Catholic Archbishop of New York. No one ever said that Nathanson was a Jew in the New York Times. He was always a gynecologist. No one ever said it was the Jews who were promoting abortion. Okay. It was always the Catholics who were opposing it because they were bigots. Okay. Now, it comes along, Roe versus Wade gets overturned, and then suddenly Ben Shapiro's in an awkward position. So he shows up at South Bend, Right to Life banquet. I said to him, a little bit of hostility in the crowd there. I come up and I say the one thing that nobody wants to talk about. And I said, Ben, 400 Jewish organizations said abortion is a fundamental Jewish value. What do you say to that? And he said, it's not true. It's not true. I'm a Jew. I have a rabbi who said it. Well, wait a minute. I said, stop. This is not a question of you. You know, I'm not denying that you're pro-life, but you don't control what the Jews say. You know, it's a majority rules operation here. There's no Jewish pope. Well, he wouldn't accept it. And so he went on in this. It kept going on worse and worse and worse. Okay. So that's one side of the equation here. Okay, we know you have to be pro-life to be conservative. Then Gaza happens. Gaza happens, and Ben, at this point, cannot control himself. Now, what did I say at the beginning? Judeo-Christian morality. It's got to be some form of morality. This goes all the way back to the founding fathers. They didn't call it Judeo-Christian. John Adams said, we have no constitution that functions in the absence of a moral people. There was always the sense that, well, there are too many Protestant sects out there. We'll never get them to agree, but we need this moral consensus because otherwise we're not going to get along with each other. That is precisely what happened when Gaza happened. So now you've got Ben Shapiro throwing any pretense that the moral law is supposed to be a universal governor of human behavior, throwing it to the winds and being a fanatical supporter of genocide in Gaza. So between the two of these things, you rock the foundation of conservatism because it's got to be some type of morality, some type of objective, universal basis for us to get along. So at this point, Candace Owens comes into the picture. Now, I don't think she wanted this fight at all. I think she was there was a niche out there. It's always there. The black conservative. Okay. That's a niche. A lot of people try to fill this thing. And she was the lady. She's also a woman. So that's another thing going for her. And she's going to fill that niche here at Daily Wire. Well, she became more and more beleaguered, largely because of a rabbi by the name of Shmuley Botik, who started to attack her like years ago, 2 years ago, calling her all sorts of awful names in a way that he does, throwing any sense of fairness to the wind, because Jews don't have to be fair. We have this righteous cause. The Hamas attacked us. We can do whatever we want to retaliate. And at a certain point, she's starting to feel more and more beleaguered. So she finally has this discussion with another rabbi, Rabbi Barkley. He comes on and he starts talking to her like the idiot child. You know, like, I know you're a Schwarza, I know you're a Shiksa, but this is the way it is. You have to understand, Candace, that. And she said, no, stop, stop. You're trying to impose your religion on me. And at that point, she blew it up. Because once you do that, you've broken with this articles of peace known as Judeo-Christian morality. We're all supposed to pretend that we all follow the Ten Commandments. That is not true anymore. History yeah. has superseded that. So if your religion, if abortion is a fundamental value of your religion, you do not worship Yahweh. You worship Moloch, the god of child sacrifice. And if you worship Moloch, you have no right to be considered part of the coalition that is known as America or conservatism or whatever. This is precisely what Ben Shapiro could not deal with. He did it himself. And Candace was simply collateral damage. So at this point, it escalates. You know, we're going up the ladder of escalation. And finally, Candace says, Christ is king. Well, yeah. that blew the fuses. All the lights went out at Daily Wire and they fired her. Because that's a step too far. Then you have this guy, Andrew Klavan, who is a convert. He's a Jew who's a convert. I think he's an Episcopalian. And he comes on and says, if you say Christ is king, you're an anti-Semite. So it has got escalated beyond any type of reconciliation now. So it's the Jews, and they have their morality. They think that it's okay to kill infants in the womb or to kill Palestinians with F-16s. And then there is the Christians who think these are both crimes. And it's never, all the king's horses and all the king's men can't put Humpty back together again. It's broken. And now all the talk about platforms and this, that, and the other thing is not going to fix it because Ben broke it himself.
Also, as the dominoes continue to fall, we see in, you know, American conservatism. First, I think, you know, before abortion, it was the whole gay marriage thing. It seemed once that became so-called legal in the United States, you know, the Republicans were quick to kind of, you know, stop fighting and campaigning and raising money on, you know, let's keep marriage between one man and one woman. And it seems to happen same with abortion. As soon as that becomes, you know, so-called, you know, goes back to the States, we see immediately, you know, especially those, you know, the people over there at Fox News, whatever they are, Republicans or whatever, immediately, Dr. Jones, they shift towards, what about 15 weeks? What about 6 weeks? You know, there's always some sort of time frame by which you can kill a baby, right? So, but where were the Judeo-Christian or, you know, the Jews on the issue with gay marriage like 10 years ago? Was that also something that they capitulated on?
Well, yeah. I mean, Amy, first of all, Joe Biden said this. It was Will and Grace, the TV show. TV shows are run by Jews. Hollywood's run by Jews. And they started this drumbeat for homosexual propaganda decades ago. I don't watch television. I've never had a television in my life. And I don't know when Will and Grace was on, but I know it was a while ago. And Joe Biden says, when the gay marriage decision came down, the Obergefell, was right around that time, Biden said, wanted to thank the Jews because you pioneered this idea. Okay, Amy Dean said in a Jewish magazine, Tikkun, that if it weren't for Jews, Jews were behind gay marriage. Well, okay, if I say that, they call me an anti-Semite because I don't approve of it. But if Amy Dean says it, it's okay. So they have a World Jewish Congress video saying Jews are right about everything, says this vapid young lady. They were right about gay marriage. They were right about abortion. They were blah, 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 blah. Okay, you've revealed your position, and it's not consonant with the Christian position. So let's just accept that fact and go our separate ways. That means there's no such thing as conservatism and so on and so forth. That's the consequence we have to draw. And that means you, the Jews, are going to be relegated to what you really are, which is an odious minority that simply cannot support America or any country where they've ever been accepted as immigrants. Cannot accept it. They have this compulsion to overthrow your society. The lady identified it in the World Jewish Congress video. She said it's called Tikkun Olam. The magazine I mentioned is based on Tikkun Olam. It's the Jewish term for we're going to heal the world. We're going to cure the world. And what they really mean is Bolshevism, revolution, the Jewish revolutionary spirit, overthrowing your culture, destroying your culture, all this type of stuff. In the name of some type of reform. Well, we are all waking up to this fact now, and it's not working. So you can have an extreme position, but you'll be isolated if you do, and I think rightly so, and that's the position we have to take. The people who believe this, who believe that abortion is good, who believe that you can kill Palestinians with impunity and starve them to death, they are not civilized people, and they have to be treated as uncivilized people and excluded from the realms of power, first of all, in this government, for example.
Yeah, I'm not even sure how that happens, though. I mean, because it seems to be when it comes to the United States, when it comes to England, when it comes to, you know, Germany, it seems that Israel has some of the most powerful friends with some of the most powerful weapons in the whole world with all the money, who will always fund them, always send them a check. So I really don't know how, you know, this whole thing eventually, I hear what you're saying. I do about conservatism and the allegiance with the Jews is, you know, the wool has been, the hoodwink is pulled over our eyes. We can see clearly now, right? What's going on. But, you still have the government. You even see Trump recently with Mike Johnson, right? Like, everyone seems to be in cahoots with this whole thing of protecting the lie at all costs.
Right. You're right. You're absolutely right. And that's exactly the problem. The fundamental problem is that these lobbies, Cardinal Sarah just gave a speech in which he said the German bishops are terrible because they are controlled by the Western lobbies. What's a Western lobby? What does that mean? It's like it's like Archbishop Chaput saying it's secularizing activists who overturned school prayer. He used to be the Archbishop of Philadelphia. The school prayer decision was happened in a suburb of Philadelphia called Abingdon. The decision is called Shemp versus Abingdon School Board. And Shemp was paid for. His case was taken up by the American Jewish Committee and argued by Leo Pfeffer. So we have to expose them when they're doing this. Forget this veil of anonymity all the time. And the first step toward achieving something is articulating the problem. That's why it's important to have these discussions. Someone has to articulate the problem. And at this point, everyone's afraid to do it because as Dave Chappelle said, there are two words you never bring together, the and you. You cannot say that. I think that the main animus, Jewish animus against the Gospel of St. John, we were warned. We Catholics were warned. Hold your hands over your ears when they read the Gospel of St. John because it might cause anti-Semitism. I think that the main problem they have is that John the Evangelist says the Jews. He says hoi judaoi, the Jews. It's a category of reality. They have an identity and they act according to that identity. And one of the major acts they committed was killing Christ. This is not going to go away, so we should be grateful what happened here because it clarifies the situation and it removes these obfuscations like conservatism. It's dead. It's gone, and Ben Shapiro can't do anything to bring it back because he killed it.
That's a great point. I did a show a few weeks ago, maybe, no, probably a couple months ago, I was, you know, being, I don't know, half serious, maybe. I think I said everything I said was not true, but there was some truth in what I said. I did these shows about CIA plants and Catholic social media, right? And so some of my viewers were asking me, you know, well, what about Dr. E. Michael Jones? And I said, oh, never Dr. E. Michael Jones. The first way you know someone's not a plant, there's two words that a CIA or Secret Service plant doesn't say. Never. They never start a sentence that ends negatively with these two words. The Jews. Start a sentence that way, but always ends positive. So that's how we know Dr. E. Michael Jones is not a plant. But, okay, so if so-called conservatism in the United States is dead, I want to ask you this question about the election in 2024, right? And the trajectory that we see so far. Of course, there's a movement that just wants to put Donald Trump behind bars so that, you know, they're doing everything they can with lawfare and everything possible. The Democrats play by a whole different set of rules that I hope everyone knows after 2020 that they have a whole different set of rules that they play by when it comes to elections. But as far as what's apparent and what's out in public, it's clear that the Democrats with Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, they're running one of their main strategies that they're running on, that their platform is running on, is child sacrifice. Kamala Harris was the first person in the history of all elections, federal elections, to openly campaign at a child sacrifice site owned by Planned Parenthood. She campaigned there and used the words abortion. So it is a memo came out, I think Friday, saying that they're going to talk about this every day. They're running on this. They ran on it in 2020 to run on it again. And so I noticed recently in on Easter, Donald Trump seems to be running on something else. I want to play you this clip and get your thoughts about this juxtaposition.
And we are going to save our country. We're going to save our country. And what the hell was Biden thinking when he declared Easter Sunday to be Trans Visibility Day? Such total disrespect to Christians. And November 5th is going to be called something else. You know what it's going to be called? Christian Visibility Day, when Christians turn out in numbers that nobody has ever seen before. Let's call it Christian Visibility Day, all right?
So with the death of conservatism, is America poised, you think, maybe to move into Christian nationalism or Christian populism? Or what's your thoughts on this whole thing?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what happened. That you had, I mean, one of the people that was talking this way was Nick Fuentes, who kept using the term Christ the King as a form of Christian nationalism. He's turned into that. I think that's a powerful position now among his generation, that it is turning into that. And they've basically given up on talk to Jonathan Greenblatt, the head of the ADL. He will tell you that they have lost that generation. That generation does not follow the script anymore. The problem is you got two parties who were controlled by the same group of people. So it's called IPAC. That's the group, that's the lobby that controls Congress. And that's the problem, that they control both sides of the aisle, and they've basically rendered the political process irrelevant, because you cannot address the fundamental issue, which is Jewish control of our culture. So I've said before, there was a time the politics have to address realities, and they're not doing it right now. It's the one area where no one addresses the reality of the situation. We had a time in America where there was an anti-Masonic party. It seems kind of weird and kind of provincial, but that was the issue back then. And thanks to our political process was able to address that issue. That's what the political process has to do. That is precisely what they're not doing now. So at the same time, Trump talks about the Christian Recognition Day. I hope I'm what I'm seeing is accurate. He's saying that he's being more flagrant in his support of Israel and Zionism and the whole genocide in Gaza. So we have two choices, basically. You can kill the baby in the womb, or you can kill the baby with an F-16. But you got to kill the baby. And neither of these is compatible with conservatism, which has to be a moral consensus. Okay, we're never going to do away with all these sects, but we have to have a moral consensus of understanding what is right and what is wrong. If we don't have that, we don't know how to act. If you don't know how to act, then you have violence, and that's precisely what we see all over the place. All over the place. Just watch X or Twitter, and there are all these videos of random acts of violence occurring because the form has been broken. This goes right back to the article you mentioned. This is what Immanuel Todt said in his article, his book, La Défaite de l'Occident, where he says basically that the American empire is collapsing because the hidden grammar of the American empire is Protestantism, and that evaporated. So no one knows how to act anymore. No one knows what the parameters of civilized behavior are, because we're daily witnessing these Jewish violations of those norms of civilized behavior.
And let's get into that. Last time you were on a show, we talked a little bit about just the depravity and just how everything just become degraded because we don't understand beauty anymore. And so I want to pull up the essay, the review of the book you did. It's over at culturewars.com. Make sure you guys hop over there. And this is just an excerpt of the article. Become a subscriber of the platform, of the publishing company, at Culture Wars, if you want to see the whole thing. But let me bring up the essay here. So Satanism as a hidden grammar of America, and it's the book entitled, I think the title in English, Dr. Michael Jones, is The Defeat of the West, I believe.
Right. Yes.
Okay. I want to read a couple excerpts that you can see from the top here. It says, America is now facing defeat in Ukraine because of the complete disappearance of Christian foundations of its culture. And then it says the zero state was preceded by the zombie state, which retains the form but is emptied of its content. Todt sees Benjamin Franklin as a typical zombie Protestant who no longer practices religion but retains his ethics attached to his values of honesty, hard work, seriousness, and always aware that man only has a limited amount of time. Zombie Protestant society emerged in Europe when Germany and Great Britain created the world. Quote here, in which religious practices weathers, but where social values of religion persist, as well as the rites of passage prescribed by various churches. Neither baptism nor marriage nor burial are called into question. But as a sign that the West no longer respects the biblical commandment to grow and multiply, fertility is falling in the middle classes. Deprived by supervision, the Protestant work ethic in Britain devolved into pure nationalism. Literacy is the fundamental Protestant value because sola scriptura requires the masses to be literate in order to have access to scriptures, where it makes every man his own priest, thus promoting democracy and egalitarianism. So I thought that was, man, that said, when I read that, and thanks for publishing that, thanks for that review. When I read that, I was moved just by I mean, my book, The Catholic Catechism on Freemasonry, I talk a lot about Kulturkampf and what happened in 1848 in the war against the Catholic, just the whole, what I saw as the first reset, this resetting of the moral law that was going on then. And so I'm reading this, I'm seeing the whole thing, just this resetting of the moral law that he's putting it in different terms. But I want, can you give more context to this and how it kind of relates to everything that we've been talking about so far?
Yeah, if you're talking about, that's a lot of the stuff you were quoting there is from Max Weber, who came up with a definition of Protestantism. Samuel Huntington did a book, it's about, we're talking about American identity. He did a book called Who Are We? Right after 9/11. And he said, we are Anglo-Protestants. And basically, he's talking about Weber. Well, is that what Protestantism is? Is it basically Protestants read the Bible? Is the Bible a Protestant object? No. They got it from the Catholic Church. They got all of these things from the Catholic Church. The Reformation was basically a looting operation. In England, there was no justification. It was theft of church property. Karl Marx said this is the beginning of capitalism, and so on and so forth. He's right, of course. It was theft. It was the beginning of capitalism. We have to get to the understanding. And I'm saying the understanding of Protestantism is Satanism. I say this, obviously people are going to be shocked. I had a lady write to me, I was in the Church of Christ for my entire life. And I guarantee you, we never worship Satan at all. And I said, yeah, I understand that. I understand that. Because there's a way in which it gets, in order to survive, it has to be, made respectable. It has to conform to reality. That's the gist of the book I'm writing now about the American identity. You have to conform to reality. But if you look at its beginning, it was theft. When you look at the beginning of America, it was the Puritans who came over here. And the main, most important, the most famous Puritan of all was John Milton. He was secretary to Cromwell. He wrote a poem called Paradise Lost, and the hero of Paradise Lost is Satan. The Romantics knew that. All you have to do is read that beginning. It's one of the greatest pieces of literature in the English language when Satan has fallen. He wakes up, he's in hell now, and he has to rally the troops, all those demons who have been expelled from heaven. And he gives one of the greatest speeches in the English language, where he says basically defines what Satanism is. You know, the mind is its own place. You can make a heaven out of hell or hell out of heaven if you want. And it's better to reign in hell than to serve in heaven. So that's the essence of Protestantism. Better to reign in hell than to serve in heaven. In other words, no one's going to tell me what to do. Well, now you're getting close. Now you're getting close. Sola Scriptura is satanic. I hate to say this, but it's satanic because no one, you think you have the right to interpret the Bible as you see fit. That's what Protestantism is based on. And what are the parameters on that? If there are none, then it's you're denying Scripture. You can make it whatever you want it to be. That's exactly what Satan said in Paradise Lost. Better to reign in hell. No one's going to tell me what to do. Non serviam. And then he concludes, arise, awake, or be forever fallen. Great rallying cry. That's what Shelley said to the Irish. He wanted to start a revolution there. And the other thing that Satan says is, here we will be free. Here, meaning hell. We're going to be free in hell.
Yeah.
Because you don't have to serve God. That's the essence of freedom, not serving God. Well, that good luck on that. You made a hell on earth was the result of this thing. And we followed it through the various centuries as it becomes more and more refined. But that was the beginning. And it was picked up by various thinkers along the way, Ralph Waldo Emerson and Self-Reliance. You know, I can do, the mind is its own place. Well, he got that from reading Paradise Lost. And he says, someone says to him, well, what if your thoughts are from the devil? Well, then I am of the devil's party. This is Ralph Waldo Emerson. That's Satanism. Is that an exaggeration? The man who understood that was his neighbor, Nathaniel Hawthorne, who then looked into the Puritan, that his great-great-grandfather was a judge at the Salem witch trial. And so here you have the essence of what we're talking about here. The three principles, sola scriptura, by scripture alone, sola fide, by faith alone, and then sola gratia, by grace alone, which means this is all from Luther. Luther created it. He was a Catholic priest who couldn't control his passions. And so he made a religion out of the fact that he couldn't control his passions. It's called the enslaved will, de servo arbitrio. Okay, look what happened here. You're saying it's all dependent on grace. Your human effort contributes nothing to this. It's worthless because we're all slaves of our passions anyway, just like me, Martin Luther. But at the same time you're saying that, you're cutting off everyone from the source of grace, which is the sacraments of the Catholic Church. So you're putting, this is the story of these poor lunatic Englishmen who came over to America. You're stuck here, no custom anymore. You're all on your own. It's just your Bible and the woods and sola gratia, and you're cut off from the sacraments. So you're all, obviously you're going to go crazy. And that's what happened within two generations. The Salem witch trials, first example of collective hysteria, a moral panic where innocent people died. And then it goes into remission for a little bit. And then you've got the Great Awakening in 1730s in the Connecticut River Valley, where the pressure on the soul that this deprivation creates drives you crazy. Drives you absolutely crazy. Mm-hmm. And the genius in this regard, the great psychologist, the great American psychiatrist, if you want to call him that, is Nathaniel Hawthorne. And he comes up with the epitome of what we're talking about, which is the minister who is the visible elect on earth. He's got to be a saint because everybody in the church has to be a saint. Only the visible elect are allowed to be members of the church, who commits adultery. So what do you do, Wayne? You're saved, right? But you just committed adultery. Now, how does that work out? And that's the genius of Nathaniel Hawthorne, because that's the book, The Scarlet Letter. He nailed the Puritan psychology. He nailed how the Reformation drives you crazy. The sola gratia drives you crazy. And America is the classic place where people went crazy because of religion.
But, man, you know, you're saying that, and it brought to mind these books that used to be very popular, I think, in late 1800s. These are books written by Horatio Alger. These are books dealing with, like, these rag-to-riches story. He wrote a lot of them. And apparently, you know, he didn't necessarily believe these things, but I thought they always represented the idea that, you know, you can pull yourself up by your bootstraps, that this is the American dream, you know, these rag to riches. But now, in relation to what you're saying now, how this relates to Protestantism, the autonomous man, who doesn't need God. His freedom is being free not to serve God, being free from God. Is the old American dream, the American idea that Horatio Alger was promoting, am I pushing it there? Is there some correlation to this whole thing?
This is, you're talking about the end of the 19th century, that's 200 years. Sort of after the Puritan colony, after the Salem witch trials, for example. So what happened at this period of time? One of the profoundest thoughts, you're a Dominican, one of the profoundest thoughts that the profoundest Dominican in ever, Thomas Aquinas, said was that existence calls essence into being. An incredibly profound statement. It's in his treatise on beauty. And this is exactly what happened to America. So you have two possibilities here of being, existence and essence. the essence was the Bible or the Calvinism, Calvinist distortion of the Bible, and existence was the woods. And you're there suddenly, and you're got the Bible, and you got the woods, and you got to survive the winter. So something's got to give. Something's got to give. Because Calvin just told you that their effort is pointless. There's no, your effort will not save you. It cuts the nerve of moral effort. Well, wait a minute. I got to get through the winter here, which means I got to do something. I have to act in a certain way. We have to have a disciplined life, because if we don't, we're not going to survive. And that's, what's the meeting line? What's the line that divides essence from existence? In America, it's called the frontier. The frontier is something, this is Frederick Jackson Turner wrote a famous essay about the frontier thesis, which is this line of civilization that's moving westward all the time, where you constantly have to modify your essence to meet existence. And the classic example, the classic example of this is Daniel Boone. Daniel Boone, we're talking about the same time, middle of the 18th century, Jonathan Edwards and Daniel Boone. Jonathan Edwards is about 30 years older than Daniel Boone. Daniel Boone is born in Pennsylvania. His family is raised him as a Quaker. What happens when you move westward? You come in contact with these Indians who don't like you. You come in contact with bears and other stuff like that. And so what happens is Daniel Boone picked up a gun. Oh, we got a Quaker who's carrying a gun here. That doesn't make any sense. And so you have to drop the religion because it will not survive reality. And that's there is the beginning. Now you see the beginning of the archetype.
Daniel Boone.
Okay, so Daniel Boone, this is 10 days after the Americans signed the Declaration of Independence in Philadelphia. Daniel Boone's daughter is floating down a river in Kentucky, and she gets captured by Indians, and they take her away into Ohio territory. And Daniel Boone gets his friends together, and they go after these guys, and they find them and rescue his daughter. And that news goes all across the country. And 50 years later, James Fenimore Cooper took that story and turned it into one of the classics of American literature, which was called The Last of the Mohicans. And he turned Daniel Boone into a mythic figure by the name of Natty Bumppo, who is the hero of the Leatherstocking Tales. And this is the beginning of American identity.
These
are the paradigms that taught Americans who they are. This is one of the most famous transformations. So now it's a Quaker with a gun, except that he's not a Quaker anymore because he's got a gun. Yeah. You see what I'm saying? This is the evolution that took place in American identity over this period of time.
Right, right. And then Horatio Alger, he comes in with his books, and it's not about God helping you pull yourself up by your bootstraps. You can do this yourself. It's fascinating. Just the history of just American literature that shaped the American identity.
Yeah. Horatio Alger is a function of Ralph Waldo Emerson, the famous philosopher. It's a function of self-reliance. Self-reliance is the antithesis of Calvinism. It's the antithesis. The one thing that Nathaniel Hawthorne, Herman Melville, Ralph Waldo Emerson, Henry David Thoreau, the one thing they had in common is they hated Calvinism. America hated Calvinism by the middle of the 19th century. And Emerson went overboard the opposite direction, from the Calvinist exaggeration of original sin to saying there's no original sin at all. And Hawthorne couldn't go along with it. Didn't go along with it.
You got to love extremes. Let me ask you this one last question before we head out. And if you have any questions for the Dr. Michael Jones before we head out of here, please let me know. But one thing that concerned me, I want to touch back on with President Trump. And we talked a little bit about Christian nationalism, Christian populism, you know, and how this could play out. One thing that always worries me is the thing that replaces a thing, right? Sometimes it's good to get rid of a thing, but sometimes the thing that replaces it could end up worse. It concerns me a bit, right? if President Trump is saying, Christians, let's unite on, you know, some things that we agree on, like, you know, boys shouldn't be playing man sports, right? You know, this whole man and woman face. Let's unite on that. That's demonic, okay? But he's also saying, you know, he's not taking a hard line on child sacrifice. He's saying, I'll let the states handle that. He's not taking a hard line on gay marriage or anything like that. So I think there's fundamental things that, especially as Catholics, we have to say no to. But does it concern you that this idea that there's this national Christianity that's maybe is even a new religion that seems to only, what do Protestants say? Let's agree on essentials. The essentials, right? Does that concern you at all?
We okay. can't go along. We can't go along with this. First of all, okay. Pope Leo XIII condemned the idea as Americanism. He wrote Testem mm-hmm. Benevolentiae. So there's certain things. Obviously, we're all over here. Why are you here? Why are you an American? Why am I American? It's called cheap labor. your folk were for free. You worked for free because they bought and sold you. And my folk worked for low wages. Until a genius like Henry Ford came along and basically started paying high wages. But the point is, why are we here? Well, because we're cheap labor. And then the point here is that we had some type of say. We did not get assimilated. The Catholics did not get assimilated. And at a certain point, we started to get really powerful in the 20th century, the 1930s. The church basically put Hollywood, put the Jews in Hollywood in their place with the Legion of Decency and the production code. And the culmination of this came with John F. Kennedy. He got elected president. At this point, I've said this so many times, but when I was 14 years old, I was at Independence Hall in Philadelphia, 4th of July, Catholic mayor, Catholic governor, Catholic president on the platform. We're taking over. And there are people who are upset, and that we know because these people murdered John F. Kennedy. It wasn't a lone deranged mm-hmm. gunman. It was a combination of the Israelis and the CIA for various reasons who murdered him because they wanted to stop the surge of Catholic power, which was basically demographic power, because we had the baby boom was basically a Catholic phenomenon. And in Philadelphia, the local version of that took place. The WASP elite joined with the Jews, an organization called Americans for Democratic Action. And the WASP elite got the Ford Foundation to bring up black folk from North and South Carolina to flood into the ethnic neighborhoods and basically destroy the parishes, the ethnic parishes in Philadelphia. Now they succeeded. And guess what Philadelphia is famous for now? It's zombies. Staggering around Kensington Avenue.
That's
what Philadelphia is famous for. That's what happens when, you know, you call down an airstrike on your own position.
A couple questions before we head out. I don't know if you know about this, Dr. E. Michael Jones, but I'll put it up here. Would Dr. E. Michael Jones speak with Brother Diamond? Oh, that's the question. All right. Question, should Christians not come together and stop squabbling and confront our greatest enemy, Jewish Talmudic Zionist supremacism?
Yes, of course. What I'm arguing for is a political coalition. In other words, we all come from, this is what America is. It's groups that come from various places. We have to unite and deal with the main problem, which is, as this person articulated, is the Jewish control of our culture. We have to unite as Americans to create a political movement that will solve this problem. Because right now the political class is incapable of solving this problem. They're all getting paid by IPAC. They're all under the control of the Israel lobby. And that means we have a political crisis right now. We have to articulate the problem and join with other people who share our views.
Thanks for coming in, Big Brother Greg. Dr. E. Michael Jones, man, thanks again for coming on the show. Such a pleasure to have you on. Thanks for borrowing a little bit of your time. And thanks for all your insights. And is there anything that we need to know about what's going over at Culture Wars, or anything that you would like us to be engaged in over there?
Yeah. Go to culturewars.com. This is the magazine we publish, which gives you a more timely version of what's going on. And then go to fidelitypress.org for the big long range picture, where all of my books are available there. The Jewish Revolutionary Spirit, the book that really defines the issue now. Also, the second edition of Libido Dominandi, Sexual Liberation as Political Control, is coming out. This book had a big effect on the 20-year-old, the generation that people. I just a short anecdote. I was pulled up to Whole Foods. I'm locking my bike, and a guy says to me, "You're E. Michael Jones, aren't you?" And I said, "Yes, I am. I pled guilty as charged." And then he said to me, "I stopped watching porn because of you." The book that did that is Libido Dominandi, Sexual Liberation and Political Control. The new edition is coming out, 300 more pages than the original edition. This is essential reading to understand one of the main forms of control in our world right now.
Man, thank you for that. Congratulations on a second edition. And what book are you? You said you're working on something else now. What's new?
On American Identity. American Identity Theft. I'm the world's worst salesman. I should never talk about something I'm working on, but it's always on my mind. And I end up talking about something that you can't buy yet because it doesn't exist yet, because I'm still writing it. But anyway, it'll be here. It'll come around sooner or later.
Awesome. Well, if I don't have you on when that comes, I hope to see you again soon. Thanks, Dr. Michael Jones.
Thank you. My pleasure. Peace.